happiness is a mood. You know, I'm happy right now and I'm sad later and I'm tired, or like, that's more of a mood. I think joy is more of a state of mind, and you can be joyful or grateful or whatever, regardless of your circumstances.
My friends, what's one word that you could use to sum up for 2019? What's one thing for you that has been tried and true this year? For me, this year has been all about growth and shedding the things that no longer serve me. I feel like the experiences I've had this year, it's my second year living full-time in New York City, second year going all in on my business, Ginny Media. It feels like my life has been put under a microscope, and all the habits, thought forms, behaviors, beliefs, things that I found to no longer be serving me were just put up in my face to a point where I could not avoid them. And I had to actually really learn to understand things about myself. For example, one thing that really came to light this year was understanding how to take care of myself emotionally. Now, that's something that's not really talked about a lot. There's a lot of talk about health and wellness in terms of, you know, meditation and the mind and the body. But what about our emotional state? Now, many traditions and studies call our emotional state our inner child, the part of us that reacts, feels, and really is the blueprint to the stories we form in our life and the beliefs that we form in our life. One thing that I learned too was that I'm not particularly very good at taking care of myself emotionally. And I say that to you from a very vulnerable place, but I found this to be so true this year that, you know, when something happens, my go-to thing is to take care of other people. And what that means is I don't acknowledge how I feel. I don't understand why I feel that way. And I also don't know what I need to do to process that. Who do I need to speak to? What do I need to do? Do I need to sit still? Do I need to let myself feel it first? So these are things that I have been discovering about myself. And I am truly happy that I've gotten to a place where I can actually reflect and really catch myself before I let myself go down that path and going into that habit again. Because if we don't change those things about ourselves, we're not going to change the outcomes of our life. They're going to stay the same. So I encourage you to think about things in your life, what's happened this year that you would like to be different next year. And that really starts with you. We've got to do the work. There's no other way around it, my friends. My next guest is the lovely Chris Green. He's the host of the Gravity Beard podcast. I connected with him on Twitter, and he is someone that I don't get to speak to very often, but someone that I often think of and I'm very fond of. He's an awesome dude, and we talk a lot about routines. We talk a lot about juggling things and mentality. This is a great podcast to listen to, especially as we go into 2020. Think about what it's going to be for you this year. Here's my next guest, the lovely Chris Green. Mr. Chris Green, welcome to the Ginny Show. Glad to have you here finally.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this. We've known each other for a while. Couldn't wait to come on your show, and thank you for having me.
It's been about, what, 4 years now, I'd say, we've known each other, but this is probably one of the first recorded conversations we're having, I guess, the second one, to be precise.
This was the second, because you were on my show, I think, in the first year that I did mine, but it's only the second time we've spoken, at least on a show. You know, we've had some other communication, but yeah, I think it's the second time we've worked together.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, I obviously I know stuff about you. I'd like to share a bit about your story to the listeners of the Ginny Show. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and what you wanted to be when you grow up.
Ooh, well, what's funny is that my life does not start out in a very interesting way. And on the surface, I'm a little self-conscious that I'm a very generic person on the surface, but not when you get a little more deeply. So I was actually born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and moved to Texas in the late 70s at the age of 4.5 or 5. So I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. I don't even know what my early influences were in terms of what I wanted to be when I grew up. My dad has a very strong personality, and so he had a lot of impact on the direction I went in all different times of my life. I ended up getting a management degree from a state university, and I'm kind of in the field of business now. But I don't remember having dreams of wanting to be anything really that interesting.
Right. So you kind of, you know, when you moved to Milwaukee, I heard recently that's one of the markets to watch for 2020 real estate in America. So, you know, you may want to reestablish some roots over there. But so you weren't actually quite sure. How did you figure that out, though, what you wanted to be when you grew up?
When I went off to school, after I graduated high school, I think I just wanted a degree that I could apply widely so that I could decide later, or I could be flexible and do a number of different things. So, I mean, I got a BBA in management, and which you could do a lot of different things with. And it wasn't, you know, we may get to this later in the conversation, but it wasn't until a lot of years later that I realized that my mother, who is a very artistic person, whereas my father isn't, actually had a bigger influence or had a bigger part of who I am. And so a lot of more interesting, more artistic things came out much, much later.
So the artistic creation in you, I love hearing these stories of how people kind of grow up and they expect or they envision the projection of their life to be one way. But, you know, as they discover more things and become more self-aware, they realize, you know, it's certainly more of a creative or artistic path to go down. So tell me how your mother played a role and was an influence in that, shaping that part of you.
Like I said, my dad has a very strong personality. My mother has a very meek personality. She's a very lovely person, but has a much meeker personality. So I think as growing up, even into early adulthood, I don't think that she had a lot of influence on me. But I also realized that the person I am is, you know, some people you say, oh, you're exactly like your dad or you're exactly like your mother. And I think I was actually a blend of the two in a way that I did not realize. And so later, when I realized, hey, I really do have a big artistic side, and that needs to be nourished and that needs to be explored, it was easy for me to say, oh, well, that's what I've inherited from my mom. And there were early signs. You know, I would do a lot of drawing, and when I was in high school, I picked up guitar and, you know, those types of things. But it was in our household, just because of how much influence my dad has, there wasn't a lot of nurturing of that. So when I showed interest in artistic things, it wasn't really cultivated at a younger age. That came later.
Right. Gotcha. I kind of want to move on to what you're doing now, and we can kind of fill in the gaps or your color in the black and white lines before we kind of paint the picture of who Chris Green is. But talk to me right now. You know, Chris, you're a family man. You just had a third child, I believe, not too long ago. I'm curious to know, how do you start your day? What's your morning routine?
Well, fortunately, I have a job where I can set my own schedule, so I can kind of come and go as I need to. So sometimes I'll get up very, very early. You know, I'll get up at 5. Other days I'll get up when I wake up, and that's probably closer to 7. But my routine actually is, regardless of the time I get up, is pretty much the same. You know, I actually don't even use an alarm clock most of the time because I've gotten up early for so long. And then I'll eat a quick breakfast, and if my children are up, I'll spend a little time with them, which I really love, and then I'm out the door.
It's interesting that your morning routine, I love the fact that you said that you don't set an alarm clock. That's a very unique thing that I've come across in my series of interviews. Is it because your body's so well trained to, works like clockwork to wake up at a certain time every day?
Yeah, I think so. I was just having this conversation earlier today. It also, unfortunately, it doesn't even matter what time I go to bed. So if I stay up too late, I'll still wake up at 6 or 6:30 or 7. There's nothing I could do about it. I would love to be able to sleep later. But like you said, it's just my body clock. I've just done it for so long that I can't get up as early as 5 or 5:30 without an alarm clock. But if you're in that 6, 6:30 range, I could probably do that every day with no clock at all.
How long have you been doing this for, Chris? Like, how long have you been getting up systematically at 6:30 every day?
Probably since I got my first job out of college. So over 25 years.
I was reading this book lately called Atomic Habits, and they talk about how, you know, we form habits as children and, you know, and then we habit stack and then we change habits, and gives you tips on how to create different habits or new habits, or depending what your goals are. It seems like you've made getting up early just as seamless as remembering to brush your teeth in the morning and the evening. It seems to be that ingrained in you.
Oh yeah, and not by choice. I'm a late night guy, so I love to stay up late and I'd love to sleep later. So this is not the routine I would choose, but you know, once you get into a rhythm, that's just how it goes.
It's almost like it's a consequence of habit. Even though you're late, it's like a consequence of habit.
A consequence of habit is an excellent way to say it. I like that a lot.
you said to me you had a lot of freedom to kind of get up when you want and you have flexible working hours, and freedom's great, especially if, you know, you're a family man and you want to juggle time with your family and kind of create and design your own day. Did you envision your future or your current situation to be the way that it is now?
No, not at all. So I'm in a job where I'm in 100% commission. So I don't have a regular salary, but the exchange for that in my industry is that you do get to come and go as you want. You know, that's you get that flexibility as a trade-off. And not only did I not envision that, but I specifically told my dad, who I used to go to for advice a lot on these things, I will never take 100% commission job. I won't do it. And that's exactly what I did. And now I've been doing it for over 20 years. So,
wow.
So no, it was the opposite of the direction I wanted or thought I was going to go in.
So there's two layers here, Chris, which I find completely fascinating. One that, you know, you're kind of in a job that doesn't give you a regular salary. You kind of have to earn, really. You kind of have to work to earn rather than you're given a salary for X amount of a time exchange, so to speak. I find that quite unique, given that you're a family man and that kind of thing, because obviously when you have children, you kind of crave that stability or that knowledge of, okay, I've got that income coming in, this is my safety net. So you've had to really, you've gone all in and you've really gone in and betted on yourself here. How has that been working for you?
Well, so there's a couple of things at work here. What also works against me in that scenario is that I'm a risk-averse person. I don't naturally take a lot of risk, especially big ones. So that you would think that's the opposite environment someone like that would want to exist in. But again, my dad at the time, when I swore to him that's not what I would do, he gave me some advice. And what he explained to me is that, especially depending on your industry, that a regular paycheck and the stability of that is actually a myth, because someone can come into your office and have made some policy decision and fire you at any moment. And then you don't have your regular paycheck. You're employed at their will. And then you have to go find another job or sometimes another career. However, depending on what type of industry you're in, if you're 100% commission, as long as you're covering what you cost the company, they're not going to fire you. You know, things might go like up and down over time, but what you make is still up to you. So it doesn't cost them nearly as much. So you're much likely to get fired. So, and that's been the case. You know, I've had times where things are going quite well, and I've had times when they've gone really, really poorly, but no one's ever come to me and said, we can't keep you anymore. We have to let you go. So I was able to maintain the things around me that I needed to be successful. I just had to work myself through whatever downtime I was in. And then things came back and I kept on rolling, but I never got fired. And so really I've experienced more security in a 100% commission job than I have in a lot of salary jobs. Now what there is that there's always kind of this threat that hangs over you that you could lose a handful of clients or something and your business could take another sharp turn downward, but I won't lose the place or the tools I need to do business.
You've actually touched on a really unique point there. As you were talking, I was thinking to myself too, when you're working on commission, you're essentially running your own business, right? It's your clientele, the relationships you had that you leverage to make your money, which is what businesses do. Me as a business owner, that's exactly what I do, but I never really thought of myself as working for commission, but it's kind of what you have to do. You have to manage a business, and that business is contingent on the amount of revenue that you yourself bring in and then deploy to your resources or your salary or whatnot that you take from that. So there's like an entrepreneurial nature to that.
There's 100% entrepreneurial nature to it. I'm even legally a one person company. That's exactly what I am, because I'm not an employee of at the place where I work. I have a sales contract with them, but I'm very much a one person company, which I love. I love the independence of that. That suits my personality. I love that I don't have a ceiling on what I can make each year. No one tells me this is what you're going to make and not a penny more. And like we've talked about, I can literally, as long as I'm productive, I can come and go however I want to. So there's a lot more responsibility. Everything's kind of riding on your shoulders, but the trade-off is more than worth it in this situation.
Yeah. You said to yourself, you're not so much risk averse. So how do you kind of, what are the coping strategies that you have when things kind of go a little pear-shaped? What do you do to kind of bounce back up? How do you keep yourself going?
I'll be very honest. I mean, when they're not going well, if they're going poorly enough, that's really difficult. And I struggle through those times, but I've done this a long time. So I know I've done it before. So I have a history to kind of build myself back up. But I mean, it can be an emotional struggle when things aren't going well. So that is difficult. There's not an easy answer to that.
The Genie Show.
The Scrabble Go Guide to Learning New Words.
Quizzical, your dad's face when he hasn't got enough vowels. Skeptical, your mom's face when you try to say small is a word. Belligerent, how your brother feels when he doesn't win. Vocabulary, what you all build when you play Scrabble Go together. Everyone's a winner with Scrabble Go, the fun brain training game you can play with family and friends wherever you are. Available on Android and iOS. Download Scrabble Go today.
The Genie Show, oh, our lonely days are gone.
I'm curious to know too, Chris, like you've talked to me about how you've kind of landed yourself in a very kind of entrepreneurial type job where you get to create your own time and your salary and create your own money and income and that sort of thing. I'm wondering who the influencers are in your life. Who would you say are the five most influential people or podcasts or whatever you fill your time, your heart, your mind and your ears with? Who are the five most influential people in your life?
That's a really good question. The five most influential people. I think my dad is less influential than he was before because he really laid a groundwork. And so he's already had his influence and that time has kind of passed. I think my wife is a big influence on me because she's got a very different personality and she's she's far more patient than I am. She extends things to me and others around her that I have a difficulty extend, whether it's patience or grace or mainly those things, just an understanding and empathy. And so she's I watch the way she parents our children, and that's a huge influence over me. But I have a handful of close friends that all kind of influence me in a similar way. And I think beyond that, in terms of taking risks, even I've seen people step out creatively towards things that I'm very interested in. And they've kind of put me over the top and caused me to take steps towards those things also. So for example, I just started taking improv classes.
Wow.
Yeah. I've taken a couple months worth of improv classes. I would not have done that if I didn't, a few years ago, a guy that I worked with went and took stand-up comedy classes. And I thought that was a really bold thing to do, which it was. And then more recently, I have another friend that started improv classes sooner than I did. And he's a very funny, and he's got probably better natural skills than I do. But I thought, well, look how much fun he's having, and look how good he's doing. And if he can do it, I can also do it. It's one of those types of life experiences. And so my other influences, it's not necessarily a list of people as much as people around me have stepped out creatively and pushed me to do the same.
That's a great answer. And I love the answers that I've been receiving on this question, because a lot of people turn immediately to, and I guess it's also the way I've angled the question as well. I've kind of changed it to who are the mm-hmm. five most influential people rather than who are the five people that you spend the most time with.
That is a much different question. The five people you spend the most time with versus the five people that influence you, because you may not spend time with the people that influence you. But also, honestly, you are on that list of people that I've seen step out and take risks, both on the business side and the creative side. And I have thought of you and what you've done and your recent journey. I personally find it really, really motivating and inspiring, because you took tremendous risk to go from where you were just a couple of years ago to where you are today. And so you are one of those people for sure.
Thank you, Chris. No, I appreciate that kind note. I kind of like when you were talking about working on commission and that kind of thing, I'm like, oh, that's kind of what I do day to day. And I never thought of it that way, because my mindset is I don't think I could have it any other way because the freedom it offers me. And yeah, and I think you really kind of summed up very clearly the journey of an entrepreneur or a business owner, because it's never just a straight line. It's always like a roller coaster ride, literally like a figure eight roller coaster ride. And you know, you constantly have to work on yourself and work on your mindset. And that's why I asked who are your most influential people, because I think having a solid, positive influence or group of people who can influence you, whether it be in thought, what you like listen to in podcasts or meditations, it really does help. So thank you. I appreciate the kind note and the shout out there. I'm curious to know too, Chris, you know, you've really created this life by design. What is your definition of happiness?
I don't mean to dodge your question. I'm not doing that. But I think it's important to make a distinction between happiness and joy. Happiness is a mood. You know, I'm happy right now and I'm sad later and I'm tired, or like that's more of a mood. I think joy is more of a state of mind, and you can be joyful or grateful or whatever, regardless of your circumstances. Circumstances are going to dictate your mood, but if you can go a step beyond that and you can be joyful even when things aren't going your way, it's an ability to take a more full assessment of things. I think that's a distinction. So I think that's what I would say about that.
That's a great way of actually defining it, because a lot of people are kind of unpacking happiness and people's version of happiness. I'm really curious to know how important happiness is to people, because I think happiness should be your ROI on everything. You know, I think we should work to mm-hmm. be happy. I think that should be our North Star. I think other people have kind of got money as their North Star or some form of thing, but I think happiness sure. is really what it needs to be to kind of drive us forward and give us the most abundant, joyful life, so to say. So joy is, like, when you look at the scale of vibrations, I think David Gillespie wrote a book on it, and I'm sure it's like a theory that's been around for ages, but joy is absolutely a vibrational state. So it is a state of mind or a state of being, and that's actually yeah. a great point that you yeah. made there. So now that you've kind of differentiated between the two, what is your definition of joyfulness, Chris?
Well, I do think joy is being able to take a full assessment of your situation and not look so closely at joy looks at a longer period of time or a wider set of circumstances versus what's going on with me in the moment in a shorter period. And I think we're using the two different words for the same concept, so I'm not arguing that. But you know, happiness is a mood, or happiness is whatever. That's very elusive and it's almost unattainable. But if you can look at it as a state of mind, It gives you a broader view. It gives you a broader perspective. So if I can maintain that perspective, if I could take inventory, if I could do that without comparing myself to other people, which I think really makes that very difficult, if I can look at the way that God has blessed me, which is abundantly over time, and look at the evidence of that, that's my definition of joy. I will ignore my circumstances in a moment, and I will take a broader assessment of what's really going on, of the real situation that I'm in.
A few things that you've mentioned there, Chris, and you've mentioned it in a very, you know, a way that is unique to you and how you communicate. With the people that I've interviewed, there's certain similarities in how happiness is defined or what they do in their behavior to create their success or happiness. And what you touched on there is some form of faith, prayer-based or meditation experience or something like that, or some sort of acknowledgement that there is a greater source to plug into or to reach out to. It's definitely right. there. There's an element mm-hmm. of gratitude of where you are and where you're at. So there's that perspective. And also the self-awareness to not continually compare yourself to other people. That whole thing of, okay, this person has more than I do and this person has this and I don't have this, because that really creates an energy of lack as opposed to abundance. So you've really kind of laid out right. some principles that I've explored before. That element of self-awareness that you talked about, like comparing yourself to other people, can you talk to me about an experience where that hasn't really been beneficial to you?
Sure. And you have done an episode, I think, on comparison, and that brought me back to center in that moment. But I live in an environment and in an industry where there's constant comparison. There's constant comparison on how much money you're making or what kind of house you live in or what kind of car you drive. There's very, very materialistic things. And, you know, I was probably very much like that when I was younger. You know, if you met me 10 or 20 years ago, I probably did keep score in those ways. And so in that regard, there's been lots of examples. And there still is that, you know, we still have a ranking in my company of who's the top producer and those types of things. And I'm still fine with those, because that's how you, there's a competitive nature and it is motivating. But as I've grown older, I've been able to not do that as much. But my whole career is built around comparison and competition around those things.
I bet you with shows like Million Dollar Listing New York, it probably doesn't help, because you're expected to
right.
portray like a Ryan Serhant or like a high kick. So I'm sure that doesn't help either.
No, it doesn't when it's on television every day. No, not at all.
Exactly. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your story. I guess to wrap up, I'd love to know if you could give some advice to anyone who's struggling to find what their own version of happiness is. Based on your experiences and what we've discussed today, what would that be?
Wow. That's a really important question that I wasn't prepared for. I think I'll say this. There's a healthy level of self-awareness that I think you have to go through life with, but you can also take that too far. So a moderate amount of self-awareness. And the other thing is, I don't think you can go through life thinking that the world or people around you owe you things. If you go through life with a sense of entitlement, or if you're, again, back to comparison, or if you're using a scale where this person gets this, so surely I should get that. Those things are, you'll never achieve happiness doing those things. You have to take care of yourself, but you can't be overly focused on yourself. You have to, I mean, when you find yourself becoming a little self-absorbed, you have to look outwardly towards the others around you. And the other thing I think is that I think is a very underrated thing. And all of these things we've talked about and shared with, if you, again, if you talk to younger me, I didn't understand any of these and I was a fool. But today, so the last thing I would add is be generous. And that doesn't necessarily mean with money, but if you can give, if you can be randomly, spontaneously generous, or in, if not money, with your time or with your talents, or, you know, give things away for free to other people when you can. I think generosity is a huge thing because that makes me happy, is whether it's giving someone advice or helping someone out of a jam, or literally just giving them money because they're in a bind and they need it. Just look for opportunities to be generous, I think, is at least part of, you know, happiness is a very complicated recipe. And that's just a few of the things that I think make up the recipe.
Damn, Chris, I think you just dropped the mic right there. That was just a brilliant definition and a very, very powerful sentiment on really the power of service. You know, I think people like Gary Vee, he talks a lot about business and, you know, giving the customer more value than they'll ever give you and doing it with the intent of not getting anything in return. What you've just talked about is you've actually defined giving and generosity away from what's generally generosity is evaluated on, which is money or some form of currency, right? I mean, giving your time, giving some sort of ear or lending some form of service is such a powerful way to create abundance in your life, because that's just, you know, it's a natural effect that it's taking your time out to be of service to someone else. An act of kindness, really. Speaking of acts of kindness, I remember 4 years ago when I think I called you at 2 a.m. It was Australian time. And one thing that we only had like one conversation on Twitter. And the first thing you said to me was, how can I help you? Because at that time I was trying to figure out my visa situation to move to America. And you got your boss on board and you said, look, would you like me to refer you to anyone? So I remember that too, and I'm so grateful for that conversation because it still stayed with me, and it's been, you know, fantastic. So you do actually live and breathe what you do talk about. So Tove, thank you, Chris Green, for joining me on the show. I really appreciate it. Please tell the good people of the Ginny Show where we can find your fabulous podcast, which may be slightly deceiving because you do not have a beard.
No, I do not. I couldn't grow a beard if you had a gun to my head. But the name of the show is Gravity Beard. The band, that's a whole nother conversation. That show has evolved tremendously and is still multidimensional. But you can get it at gravitybeard.com. We're hosted on Podbean. We've got a very engaged interactive group on Facebook called the Gravity Beard Interns, which I would describe two ways. One, it's an absurd universe that's taken on a life of its own. But also the motto of the group is that it's where we have serious conversations about the dumbest things ever. And that's the best way to describe it. So if you want to, if you need a place, and people, I've had more than one person tell me it's their favorite place on the internet, and they were sincere. That is a big compliment, because there's a lot of great things on the internet. It is. It's just an absurd little universe where everybody goes there to act like children, and we love it. But that's where you find our show, and that's where we hang out. I'm not super active on Twitter, but we're at The Gravity Beard on Twitter. But thank you. It's truly sincerely my pleasure to be here. I really, really enjoyed it. And thank you for letting me come on.
Back at you, Chris. It's been absolutely lovely having this conversation. So guys, make sure you check out the Gravity Beard podcast on your favorite podcast player, but also tweet at Chris at the Gravity Beard on Twitter as well. So Chris Green, thank you so much for your time. Been awesome chatting happiness with you.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look, live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.